4 of them, in only 13 weeks. As if sensing her question, the king said, "These tests will not be easy, nor will your training. Some of you might die in the process. We will add additional elimination tests as we see fit. And if you fall behind, if you fail, if you displease me, you will be packed off to whatever dark hole you came from. The week after Yulmas, the 4 remaining champions will face each other in a duel to win the title. Until then, while my court is aware that some sort of contest is being held among my closest friends and advisors," he waved a huge, scarred hand to encompass the room, "you will keep your business private. Any wrongdoing on your part, and I'll stake you to the front gates." By accident, her gaze slipped onto the king's face, and she found his dark eyes staring into hers. The king smirked. Her heart threw itself backward and clung to the bars of her ribcage. Murderer. He should be hanging from the gallows. He had killed many more than she, people undeserving and defenseless. He'd destroyed cultures, destroyed invaluable knowledge, destroyed so much of what had once been bright and good. His people should revolt. Irelia should revolt, the way those few rebels had dared to do. Selena struggled to maintain his gaze. She couldn't retreat. "Is that understood?" the king asked, still staring at her. Her head was heavy as she nodded. She had only till Yulmas to beat them all. One test a week, perhaps more. "Speak!" the king bellowed to the room, and she tried not to flinch. "Are you not grateful for this opportunity? Do you not wish to give me your thanks and allegiance?" She bowed her head and stared at his feet.
"Thank you, Your Majesty. I am most appreciative," she murmured,
the sound blending in with the words of the other champions. The king put a hand upon Nothung's hilt. "This should be an interesting 13 weeks. She could feel his attention still upon her face, and she ground her teeth. "Prove trustworthy, become my champion, and wealth and glory will be yours eternal."
Only 13 weeks to win her freedom.
"I am to depart next week for my own purposes. I will not return until Yulmas. But don't think I won't be able to give the command to execute any of you, should I hear word of any trouble or accidents."
The champions nodded once more.
"If we're finished, I'm afraid I must take my leave," interrupted Dorian from beside her, and her head snapped up at the sound of his voice, and his impertinence in interrupting his father.
He bowed to his father, and nodded to the mute counselors. The king waved his son away, not even bothering to look at him. Dorian winked at Kaol before walking from the room. "If there are no questions," the king said to the champions and their sponsors, in a tone that suggested that asking questions would only guarantee a trip to the gallows, "then you have my leave. Do not forget that you are here to honor me and my empire. Begone, all of you."
Selena and Kaol didn't speak as they strode down the hallway, quickly moving from the throng of competitors and their sponsors, who lingered to speak with one another and size each other up. With every step away from the king, steadying warmth returned. It wasn't until they rounded a corner that Kaol let out a deep breath and removed his hand from her back.
"Well, you managed to keep your mouth shut, for once," he said.
"But how convincing she was in her nodding and bowing," said a cheerful voice. It was Dorian, leaning against a wall.
"What are you doing?" Kaol asked.
Dorian pushed off the wall. "Why, waiting for you, of course."
"We're to dine this evening," Kaol said.
"I was speaking to my champion," Dorian said with a roguish wink. Remembering how he'd smiled at the court lady the day of their arrival, she kept her gaze ahead. The crown prince took up a place safely beside Kaol as they walked. "I apologize for my father's gruffness."
She stared down the hall at the servants who bowed to Dorian.
He ignored them. "By the word," Dorian laughed, "he's trained you well already."
He nudged Kaol with his elbow.
"From the way you two are blatantly ignoring me, I'd say she could pass for your sister. Though you don't really look like each other.
It would be hard to pass off someone so pretty as your sister.
Selena was unable to keep a hint of a smile from her lips. Both she and the prince had grown up under strict, unforgiving fathers, well, father figure in her case. Arobin had never replaced the father she'd lost, nor had he ever tried to. But at least Arobin had an excuse for being equal parts tyrannical and doting. Why had the King of Otterlin let his son become anything but an identical copy of himself?
There, Dorian said, a reaction. Thank the gods I've amused her.
He glanced behind them, making sure there was no one there before his voice quieted.
I don't think Kaol told you our plan before the meeting. Risky, on all of our parts.
What plan? She traced a finger along the beading on her skirts, watching it shimmer in the afternoon light.
For your identity, which you should keep quiet about. Your competitors might know a thing or two about Otterlin's assassin and use it against you.
Fair enough, even if it had taken them weeks to bother to fill her in. And who exactly am I to be if not a ruthless killer?
To everyone in this castle, Dorian said, your name is Lillian Gordana. Your mother is dead, and your father is a wealthy merchant from Belhaven. You are the sole heir to his fortune. However, you have a dark secret. You spend your nights as a jewel thief. I met you this summer after you tried to rob me while I was vacationing in Belhaven, and I saw your potential then. But your father discovered your nightly fun, and removed you from the lure of the city to a town near Endovir. When my father decided to have this competition, I journeyed to find you, and brought you here as my champion. You can fill in the gaps yourself.
She raised her eyebrows. Really? A jewel thief?
Kaol snorted, but Dorian went on. It's rather charming, don't you think?
When she didn't respond, the prince asked, Do you find my home to your liking?
It's very fine indeed, she said dully.
Very fine indeed. Maybe I should move my champion to even larger chambers.
If it pleases you.
Dorian chuckled.
I'm glad to find that seeing your competition hasn't damaged that swagger of yours.
What do you make of Cain?
She knew whom he meant.
Perhaps you should start feeding me whatever Parrington is giving him.
When Dorian continued staring at her, she rolled her eyes.
Men of his size usually aren't very fast or very nimble. He could knock me out in one punch, probably, but he'd have to be swift enough to catch me.
She gave Kaol a quick glance, daring him to challenge her claim, but Dorian answered.
Good. I thought so. And what of the others? Any potential rivals?
Some of the champions have rather gruesome reputations.
Everyone else looks pathetic, she lied.
The prince's smile grew.
I bet they won't expect to be trounced by a beautiful lady.
This was all a game to him, wasn't it?
Before Selena could ask, someone curtsied in the middle of their path.
Your Highness! What a surprise!
The voice was high, but smooth and calculated. It was the woman from the garden. She'd changed. She now wore a gown of white and gold that, despite herself, Selena greatly admired. She was unfairly stunning. And Selena was willing to bet a fortune that this was anything but a surprise. The woman had probably been waiting here for a while.
Lady Caltaine, Dorian said tersely, his body tensing.
I've just come from Her Majesty's side, said Caltaine, putting her back to Selena. The assassin might have bothered to care about the slight if she had any interest in courtiers. Her Majesty wishes to see Your Highness. Of course, I informed Her Majesty that Your Highness was in a meeting and could not be—
Lady Caltaine, interrupted Dorian.
I'm afraid you haven't been introduced to my friend.
Selena could have sworn the young woman bristled.
Allow me to present the Lady Lillian Gordana. Lady Lillian, meet Lady Caltaine Rompier.
Selena curtsied, restraining the urge to keep walking.
If she had to deal with too much courtly nonsense, she might be better off back in Endovir.
Caltaine bowed, the gold streaks in her dress glistening in the sunlight.
Lady Lillian is from Belhaven. She arrived just yesterday.
The woman studied Selena from beneath dark, shaped eyebrows.
And how long will you be staying with us?
Only a few years, Dorian said with a sigh.
Only? Why, Your Highness, how droll! That is a very long stretch of time.
Selena studied Caltaine's narrow, narrow waist. Was it really that small? Or could she barely breathe in her corset? She caught a glance exchanged between the two men. Exasperation, annoyance, condescension.
The Lady Lillian and Captain Westfall are very close companions, Dorian said dramatically. To Selena's delight, Kaol blushed. It will feel short for them, I assure you.
And for you, Your Highness?
Caltaine said coyly. A concealed edge lingered beneath her voice.
Mischief coiled and sprang within her, but Dorian answered.
I suppose, he drawled, turning those brilliant blue eyes on Selena, that it will be difficult for Lady Lillian and I as well.
Perhaps more so. Caltaine snapped her attention to Selena.
Wherever did you find that dress? She purred. It's extraordinary.
I had it made for her, Dorian said casually, picking at his nails.
The assassin and the prince glanced at each other, their blue eyes reflecting the same intent. At least they had one common enemy.
It does look extraordinary on her, doesn't it?
Caltaine's lips pursed for a moment, but then bloomed into a full smile.
Simply stunning. Though such pale green tends to wash out women of pallid skin.
The Lady Lillian's paleness was a source of pride for her father. It makes her rather unusual.
Dorian looked to Kaol, who failed in his attempt to not appear incredulous.
Don't you agree, Captain Westfall?
Agree about what? He snapped.
How unusual our Lady Lillian is.
Shame on you, Your Highness, Selena chided, concealing her wicked amusement beneath a giggle. I pale in comparison to Lady Caltaine's fine features.
Caltaine shook her head, but looked at Dorian as she spoke.
You are too kind.
Dorian shifted on his feet.
Well, I've dallied enough. I must attend to my mother.
He bowed to Caltaine, then to Kaol. Finally, he faced Selena. She watched with raised brows as he lifted her hand to his lips. His mouth was soft and smooth upon her skin, and the kiss sent a red-hot line of fire up through her arm that singed her cheeks. She fought against the urge to step back, or smack him.
Until our next meeting, Lady Lillian, he said with a charming smile.
She would have highly enjoyed seeing Caltaine's face, but she dipped into a curtsy.
We must be on our way as well, Kaol said as Dorian strode off, whistling to himself, his hands in his pockets. May we escort you anywhere?
It was an insincere offer.
No, Caltaine said flatly, the facade falling. I'm meeting with His Grace, Duke Parrington. I do hope we'll see more of each other, Lady Lillian, she said,
watching her with a keenness that would make any assassin proud.
We must be friends, you and I.
Of course, Selena said. Caltaine swept past them, the skirts of her dress floating in the air around her. They resumed walking, waiting until her footsteps had vanished from their ears before speaking.
Enjoyed that, did you?
Kaol growled.
Immensely.
Selena patted Kaol's arm as she took it in her own.
Now you must pretend that you like me, or else everything will be ruined.
You and the Crown Prince share the same sense of humor, it seems.
Perhaps he and I will become dear friends, and you will be left to rot.
Dorian is more inclined to associate with ladies of better breeding and beauty.
She whipped her head to look at him. He smiled.
How vain you are.
She glared. I hate women like that. They're so desperate for the attention of men that they'd willingly betray and harm members of their own sex.
And we claim men cannot think with their brains.
At least men are direct about it. They say that her father is as rich as a king, Kaol said. I suppose that's part of why Parrington is so infatuated. She arrived here in a litter bigger than most peasant huts. It was carried here from her home, a distance of almost 200 miles.
What debauchery.
I pity her servants,
I pity her father. They chuckled, and he lifted the arm linked with hers a bit higher. She nodded to the guards outside her chambers as they stopped. She faced Kaol.
Are you eating lunch?
I'm starved.
He glanced at the guards, his smile fading. I have important work to do. Like prepare a company of men for the king to bring with him on his journey.
She opened the door but looked at him. The tiny freckle upon his cheek moved upward as a smile spread once more.
What? She asked.
Something smelled delicious inside her chambers, and her stomach grumbled. Kaol shook his head.
Otterlin's assassin.
He chuckled and began walking back down the hall.
You should rest, he called over his shoulder. The competition actually begins tomorrow. And even if you're as fantastic as you claim to be, you're going to need every moment of sleep you can get.
Though she rolled her eyes and slammed the door, Selena found herself humming throughout her meal.
Chapter 11
Selena felt as if she'd barely closed her eyes when a hand jabbed her side. She groaned, wincing as the drapes were thrown back to welcome the morning sun.
Wake up.
Not surprisingly, it was Kaol. She shimmied beneath the blankets, pulling them over her head, but he grabbed the covers and threw them to the floor. Her nightgown was wrapped around her thighs. Selena shivered.
It's cold, she moaned,
holding her knees to her body. She didn't care that she only had a few months to beat the other champions. She needed sleep. It would have been nice if the Crown Prince had considered springing her from Endovir earlier, so she could have some time to regain her strength. How long had he known about this competition anyway?
Get up.
Kaol ripped the pillows from beneath her head.
Now you're wasting my time.
If he noticed how much skin she was showing, he didn't react. Grumbling, Selena slithered to the edge of the bed, dangling a hand over the edge to touch the floor.
Fetch my slippers, she mumbled. The floor's like ice.
He growled, but Selena ignored him as she got to her feet. She staggered and slouched into the dining room, where an enormous breakfast lay on the table. Kaol jerked his chin toward the food.
Eat up. The competition starts in an hour.
Whatever nerves she felt, she kept them hidden from him as she gave an exaggerated sigh and collapsed into a chair with the grace of a large beast. Selena scanned the table. Yet again, there were no knives. She stabbed her fork into a piece of sausage. From the doorway, Kaol asked,
Why, might I ask, are you so tired?
She gulped down the rest of the pomegranate juice and wiped her mouth on a napkin.
I was up until 4 reading, she said. I sent a letter to your princeling, asking for permission to borrow books from the library. He granted my wish, and sent 7 books from his personal library that I'm commanded to read.
Kaol shook his head in disbelief.
It isn't your place to write to the Crown Prince.
She gave him a simpering smile and took a bite of ham. He could have ignored the letter. And besides, I'm his champion. Not everyone feels obligated to be as nasty to me as you do.
You're an assassin.
If I say I'm a jewel thief, will you treat me with more courtesy?
She waved a hand.
Don't answer that.
She spooned porridge into her mouth, found it to be bland, and scooped 4 heaping mounds of brown sugar into the gray mess. Would the competitors actually be worthy opponents? Before she could start worrying, she examined his black clothes.
Don't you ever wear normal clothing?
Hurry up, was all he said.
The competition awaited. Suddenly not hungry, she pushed away her bowl of porridge.
I should get dressed, then.
She turned her head to call for Philippa, but paused.
Just what sort of activities might I expect at the tournament today, so I can dress accordingly, of course?
I don't know. They don't give us the details until you arrive.
The captain rose and drummed the pommel of his sword before calling to a servant, as Selena walked into her bedroom. Behind her, Kaol spoke to the servant girl.
Dress her in pants and a shirt. Something loose, nothing frilly or revealing. And bring a cloak.
The girl disappeared into the dressing room. Selena followed after her, unceremoniously stripping down to her underclothes, and enjoying it far too much when Kaol's cheeks reddened before he turned away. A few minutes later, Selena frowned at herself as she hurried after the captain into the foyer.
"I look ridiculous! These pants are absurd, and this shirt is awful!"
"Stop whining. No one gives a damn about your clothes."
He flung open the door to the hall, the guards outside instantly at attention.
"Besides, you can take them off at the barracks. I'm sure everyone will be thrilled to see you in your undergarments."
She swore violently under her breath, pulling her green velvet cloak tight around herself, and trailed after him. The captain of the guard rushed through the castle, still freezing with the early morning chill, and they soon entered the barracks. Guards in various states of armor saluted them. An open doorway revealed a large mess hall, where many of the guards were just sitting down to breakfast. Finally, Kaol stopped somewhere on the ground floor. The giant rectangular room they entered was the size of the grand ballroom. Lined with pillars that supported a mezzanine, the floor was checkered black and white tile, and the floor-to-ceiling glass doors that made up one entire wall were open, the gossamer curtains blowing in the chilly breeze that drifted in from the garden. Most of the 23 other champions were already scattered throughout the room, sparring with what could only be their sponsors' trainers. Everyone was carefully monitored by guards. None bothered to look at her, save for that slightly handsome young man with the gray eyes, who gave her a half-smile before returning to firing arrows at a target across the room with unnerving accuracy. She lifted her chin and surveyed a rack of weapons.
"You expect me to use a mace an hour after sunrise?"
6 guards appeared in the doorway behind them, joining the dozens already in the chamber, swords at the ready.
"If you attempt anything foolish," Kaol said quietly, "they'll be here."
"I'm just a jewel thief, remember?"
She approached the rack. "Foolish, foolish decision to leave all those weapons out. Swords, sword breakers, axes, bows, pikes, hunting daggers, maces, spears, throwing knives, wooden staves." While she generally preferred the stealth of a dagger, she was familiar with every weapon here. She glanced around the sparring room and hid her grimace. So were most of the competitors, it seemed. As she inspected them, she caught a movement in the corner of her vision. Kane entered the hall, flanked by 2 guards and a scarred, burly man who must have been his trainer. She squared her shoulders as Kane strode straight toward her, his thick lips parting in a grin.
"Good morning," he said,
his voice raspy and deep. His dark eyes snaked along her body, then found her face again.
"I'd have thought you'd be running home by now."
She gave him a close-lipped smile.
"The fun's just starting, isn't it?"
Kane returned her smile and stalked off.
It would have been so, so easy. So easy to whirl and grab him by the neck and slam his face into the ground.
She didn't even realize she was trembling with rage until Kaol stepped into her line of vision.
"Save it for the competition,"
he said softly, but not weakly.
"I'm going to kill him," she breathed.
"No, you're not. If you want to shut him up, then beat him. He's just a brute from the king's army. Don't waste your strength on hating him."
She rolled her eyes.
"Thank you so much for interfering on my behalf."
"You don't need me to rescue you."
"It still would have been nice."
"You can fight your own battles."
He pointed with his sword to the weapons rack.
"Pick one."
His eyes shone with the challenge as she untied her cloak and tossed it behind her.
"Let's see if you can actually back up your swaggering."
She'd shut Kane up, in an unmarked grave for all eternity. But for now, she'd make Kaol eat his words. All the weapons were finally made and glistened in the sunlight. Selena eliminated her options one by one, seeing each weapon for what sort of damage she might do to the captain's face. Her heart beat rapidly as she ran a finger across the blades and handles of each. She found herself torn between the hunting daggers and a lovely rapier with an ornate bell guard. She could cut out his heart from a safe distance with that. The sword whined as she drew it from the stand and held it in her hands. It was a good blade, strong, smooth, light.
They wouldn't let her have a butter knife on her table, but they gave her access to this?
Why not wear him down a bit?
Kaol tossed his cape on top of hers, his toned body flexing through the dark threads of his shirt. He drew his sword. On your guard! He moved into defensive position, and Selena looked at him dully.
Who do you think you are?
What sort of person says, on your guard?
Aren't you going to first show me the basics?
She said quietly enough for only him to hear, her sword dangling from one hand. She rubbed the hilt, her fingers contracting on the cool surface.
I was in Endovier for a year, you realize. I could have easily forgotten.
From the amount of killing that went on in your section of the mines, I highly doubt you've forgotten a thing.
That was with a pickaxe, she said,
her smile growing feral.
All I had to do was crack a man's head open or hurl the axe into his stomach.
Thankfully, none of the other champions paid them any heed.
If you consider that sort of gracelessness equal to swordsmanship, what sort of fighting do you do, Captain Westfall?
She put a spare hand over her heart and closed her eyes for emphasis. With a growl, the captain of the guard lunged. But she had been waiting for some time now, and her eyes flew open as soon as his boots scraped against the ground. With a turn of her arm, she brought the sword into blocking position, her legs bracing for the impact as steel struck steel. The noise was strange, somehow more painful than receiving the blow, but Selena thought little of it when he charged again and she met his weapon, parrying with ease. Her arms ached as they were shaken from their slumber, but she continued to deflect and parry. Sword play was like dancing. Certain steps must be followed or else it would fall apart. Once she heard the beat, it all came rushing back. The other competitors faded away into shadows and sunlight. Good, he said through his teeth, blocking her thrust as she forced him to take a defensive stance. Her thighs burned. Very good, he breathed. He was pretty good himself. Better than good, actually. Not that she'd tell him that. With a clang, the two swords met, and they pressed each other's blades. He was stronger, and she grunted at the force required to hold her sword against his. But strong as he might be, he was not as quick. She withdrew and fainted, her feet jabbing and flexing on the floor with bird-like grace. Caught off guard, he only had time to deflect, his parry lost in his size. She surged forward, her arm coming down again and again, twisting and turning, loving the smooth ache within her shoulder as the blade slammed against his. She was moving fast, fast like a dancer in a temple ritual, fast like a snake in the red desert, fast like water down the side of a mountain. He kept up, and she allowed him to advance before reclaiming the position. He tried to catch her unawares with a blow to the face, but her anger awoke as her elbow snapped up and deflected, slamming into his fist and forcing it down. Something to remember when fighting me, Sardothian, he panted. The sun caught in his golden brown eyes. Hmm, she grunted, lunging to deflect his newest attack. I don't lose. He grinned at her, and before she could comprehend the words, something cut into her feet and... She had the sickening feeling of falling. She gasped as her spine collided with marble, the rapier flying from her hand. Kaol pointed his blade at her heart. I win, he breathed. She pushed herself onto her elbows.
You had to resort to tripping me. That's hardly winning at all.
I'm not the one with the sword at my heart. The sound of clashing weapons and labored breathing filled the air. She flicked her eyes to the other champions, who were all in the middle of sparring. All, of course, except Cain. He grinned broadly at her, and Selena bared her teeth. You have the skills, Kaol said, but some of your moves are still undisciplined. She broke her stare with Cain and glared up into Kaol's face.
That's never stopped me from killing before, she spat.
Kaol clucked at her agitation and pointed his sword at the rack, allowing her to get to her feet. Pick another. Something different. Make it interesting, too. Something that will make me sweat, please.
"You'll be sweating when I skin you alive and squish your eyeballs beneath my feet," she muttered, picking up the rapier.
"That's the spirit."
She practically threw the rapier into place and drew the hunting knives without hesitation. "My dear old friends." A wicked smile spread across her face. Chapter 12. Just as Selena was about to launch herself and her knives at the captain, someone stomped a spear on the ground and called the room to attention. She faced the voice and found a stocky, balding man standing beneath the mezzanine.
"Your attention now," the man repeated.
Selena looked to Kaol, who nodded, taking the knives from her as they joined the 23 other competitors encircling the man.
"I'm Theodos Brullo, weapons master and judge of this competition. Of course our king's the final judge of you sorry lot, but I'll be the one determining every day if you're fit to be his champion."
He patted his sword hilt, and Selena had to admire the beautiful woven gold of the pommel.
"I've been weapons master here for 30 years, and lived in this castle for 25 more than that. I've trained many a lord and knight, and many a would-be champion of Otterlan. It will be very hard to impress me."
Beside Selena, Kaol stood with his shoulders thrown back. It occurred to her that Brullo might have trained the captain. Given how easily Kaol had kept up with her, if Brullo had trained him, then the weapons master must live up to his title. She knew better than anyone not to underestimate opponents based on their appearance.
"The king's already told you all there is to know about this competition," Brullo said, holding his hands behind his back. "But I figured you lot are itching to know more about each other."
He pointed a stubby finger at Cain.
"You. What's your name, occupation, and where do you hail from? And be honest about it. I know none of you are bakers and candlestick makers."
Cain's insufferable grin returned.
"Cain, soldier in the king's army. I hail from the White Fang Mountains."
Of course he did. She'd heard tales of the brutality of the mountain folk from that region, and seen a few of them up close, seen the fierceness in their eyes. Many of them had rebelled against Otterlan, and most wound up dead. What would his fellow mountain dwellers say if they could see him now? She gritted her teeth. What would the people of Terrasen say if they could see her now? Brullo, however, either didn't know or didn't care, and didn't even give a nod before he pointed to the man to Cain's right. Selena immediately liked him.
"And you?"
A slender, tall man with thinning blonde hair surveyed the circle and sneered.
"Xavier Forrell, Master Thief of Melisande."
"Master Thief? That man?"
Of course she realized his reed thinness probably aided in slipping into houses. Maybe it wasn't a bluff. One by one, the 21 other competitors introduced themselves. There were 6 more seasoned soldiers, all of them thrown out of the army for questionable behavior, which must have truly been questionable, given that Otterlan's army was notorious for ruthlessness. Then there were the 3 other thieves, including the dark-haired, gray-eyed Knox Owen, whom she'd actually heard of in passing, and who'd been giving her such charming smiles all morning. The 3 mercenaries looked ready to boil someone alive, and then there were the 2 shackled murderers. As his name suggested, Bill Chastain, the Eye Eater, ate the eyes of his victims. He looked surprisingly plain, with mousy brown hair, tan skin, and average height, though Selena had trouble not staring at his scar-flecked mouth. The other murderer was Ned Clement, who'd gone for 3 years under the name Scythe, for the weapon he'd used to torture and hack apart temple priestesses. It was a wonder they hadn't executed either man, though from their tanned skin, she guessed they'd spent the years since their captures toiling under the sun in Calicula, the southern sister labor camp to Endovier. Next came 2 scarred, silent men, who seemed to be cronies of some far-off warlord, and then the 5 assassins. She immediately forgot the names of the first 4. A gangly, haughty boy, a hulking brute, a disdainful runt of a man, and a sniveling, hawking-nosed prat who claimed he had an affinity for knives. They weren't even in the Assassin's Guild. Not that Aerobin Hommel would ever allow them in.
Membership required years of training and a more than impressive track record. While these four might be skilled, they lacked the refinement that Aerobin favored in his followers. She'd have to keep an eye on them, but at least they weren't the silent assassins from the windswept dunes of the Red Desert. Those would be worthy of her. They'd made her sweat a bit. She'd spent a month training with them one burning summer, and her muscles still ached at the memory of their grueling exercises. The last assassin, who called himself Grave, made her pause. He was slight and short, with the kind of wicked face that made people quickly look away. He'd entered the room wearing shackles, and only had them removed when his guards, all five of them, gave him a stern warning. Even now they stood nearby, watching him relentlessly. As he introduced himself, Grave flashed an oily smile, revealing his brown teeth. Her disgust didn't improve when Grave ran an eye over her body. An assassin like that never stopped at just killing. Not if his victim was female. She willed herself to hold his hungry gaze. "And you?" Brillo said, cutting into her thoughts.
"Lillian Gordana," she said, holding her chin high. "Jewel thief from Bellhaven."
Some of the men sniggered, and she clenched her teeth. They'd stop their laughing if they knew her true name, if they knew that this jewel thief could skin them alive without a knife. "Fine," Brillo said, waving a hand. "You all have 5 minutes to put away your weapons and catch your breath. Then we're on a mandatory run to see how fit you are. Those of you who can't run the distance, go home, or back to whatever prison your sponsors found you rotting in. Your first test is in 5 days. Consider us merciful it's not sooner." With that, everyone scattered, the champions murmuring to their trainers about whatever competitor they deemed the biggest threat. Cain or Grave, most likely. Certainly not a jewel thief from Bellhaven. Kaol remained beside her, watching the champions stride off. She hadn't spent 8 years building a reputation and a year laboring in Endovir to be disregarded like this.
"If I have to call myself a jewel thief again..."
Kaol raised his brows. "You'll do what, exactly?"
"Do you know how insulting it is to pretend to be some nobody thief from a small city in Fenharrow?"
He stared her down, quiet for a moment.
"Are you that arrogant?"
She bristled, but he went on.
"It was foolish to spar with you just now. I'll admit that I hadn't realized you'd be that good. Thankfully, no one noticed. And do you want to know why, Lillian?"
He took a step closer, his voice lowering.
"Because you're some pretty little girl. Because you're a nobody jewel thief from a small city in Fenharrow. Look around."
He half-turned to the other champions.
"Is anyone staring at you? Are any of them sizing you up? No, because you're not real competition. Because you don't stand between them and whatever freedom or wealth they're looking for."
"Exactly! It's insulting!"
"It's smart. That's what it is. And you're going to keep a low profile throughout this entire competition. You're not going to excel, and you're not going to trounce those thieves and soldiers and unknown assassins. You're going to stay solidly in the middle, where no one will look your way, because you're not a threat, because they'll think that you'll be eliminated sooner or later, and they should focus their attention on getting rid of bigger, stronger, faster champions, like Cain. But you're going to outlast them," Kaol continued. "And when they wake up on the morning of the final duel, and find that you are their opponent, and that you have beaten them, the look on their faces will make all of the insults and lack of attention worthwhile."
He extended his hand to lead her outside.
"So, what do you have to say about that, Lillian Gordana?"
"I can look out for myself," she said lightly, taking his hand. "But I have to say that you're rather brilliant, Captain. So brilliant, actually, that I might give you one of the jewels I plan to steal from the Queen tonight."
Kaol chuckled, and they strode outside to where the running contest awaited. Her lungs burned and her legs were leaden, but she kept running, kept her position in the middle of the pack of champions. Brillo, Kaol, and the other trainers, along with 3 dozen armed guards, followed them around the game park on horseback. Some of the champions,
Grave, Ned, and Bill included, had been given long manacles. She supposed it was a privilege that Kael hadn't locked her up, too. But to her surprise, Kane led the pack, and was nearly 10 yards in front of the rest of them. How could he possibly be that fast? The sound of crunching leaves and labored breathing filled the warm autumn air, and Selena kept her gaze on the damp and gleaming dark hair of the thief in front of her. One step after another, one breath in, one breath out. Breathe. She had to remember to keep breathing. Ahead, Kane turned a corner, heading north, back toward the castle. Like a flock of birds, they followed him, one step after another, never slowing down. Let them all watch Kane. Let them plot against him. She didn't need to win the race to prove she was better. She was better without any kind of validation that the king could give her. She missed a breath, and her knees wobbled, but she kept upright. The run would be over soon. Soon. She hadn't even dared to look behind her to see if any had fallen. She could feel Kael's eyes on her, though, reminding her to keep in the middle. At least he had that much faith in her. The trees parted, revealing the field that lay between the game park and the stables. The end of the path. Her head spun, and she would have cursed at the stitch that lanced through her side had she had any breath to do so. She had to stay in the middle. Stay in the middle. Kane cleared the trees and raised his arms above his head in victory. He ran a few more feet, slowing his pace to cool down, and his trainer cheered for him. Selena's only response was to keep her feet moving. Only a few yards left. The light of the open field grew brighter and brighter as it approached. Stars flashed before her eyes, swarming in her vision. She had to stay in the middle. Years of training with Arab and Hommel had taught her the dangers of giving up too easily. Then she was through the trees, and the open field surrounded her in an explosion of space and grass and blue sky. The men in front of her slowed to a stop. It was all she could do to keep from sinking to her knees, but she made her legs slow, 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 made her feet walk, made herself take breath after breath, as the stars continued bursting before her eyes. Good, Brello said, reining his horse and surveying whoever had returned first. Get water. We've got more training after this. Through the spots in her vision, she saw Kael stop his horse. Her feet moved of their own accord toward him, then passed, back to the woods. Where are you going?
I dropped my ring back there, she lied,
doing her best to look scatterbrained.
Just give me a moment to find it.
Without waiting for his approval, she entered the trees to the sneers and snickers of the champions who had overheard. From the approaching crashing noises, she knew another champion was on his way out. She stepped into the cover of the bushes, stumbling as the world became dark and light and tilted. She had barely sunk to her knees when she vomited. She heaved and heaved until she had nothing left inside. The straggling champion passed by. On trembling limbs, she grappled onto a nearby tree and hauled herself upright again. She found Captain Westfall standing across the path, watching her with pursed lips. She wiped her mouth on the back of her wrist and said nothing to him as she exited the woods. Chapter 13. It was lunchtime when Brello released them for the day, and to say that Selena was hungry would be a severe understatement. She was halfway through her meal, shoveling meat and bread down her throat, when the dining room door opened.
"What are you doing here?"
she said through a mouthful.
"What?"
said the captain of the guard, taking a seat at the table. He'd changed his clothes and taken a bath. He pulled a platter of salmon toward him and piled it on his plate. Selena made a disgusted face, her nose crinkling.
"You don't care for salmon?"
"I hate fish. I'd rather die than eat it."
"That's surprising,"
he said, taking a bite.
"Why?"
"Because you smell like one."
She opened her mouth to expose the ball of bread and beef that she was chewing. He shook his head.
"You might fight well, but your manners are a disgrace."
She waited for him to mention her earlier vomiting, but he didn't continue.
I can act and talk like a lady if it pleases me.
Then I suggest that you begin to do so.
After a pause, he asked,
How are you enjoying your temporary freedom?
Is that a snide remark or an honest question?
He took a bite of fish. Whichever you like.
The window revealed the afternoon sky, slightly pale but still lovely. I'm enjoying it, for the most part. Especially now that I have books to read whenever you lock me in here. I don't suppose you'd understand.
On the contrary, I might not have as much time to read as you and Dorian do, but that doesn't mean I love books any less.
She bit into an apple. It was tart, with a sweet, honey-like aftertaste. Oh? And what books do you love? He named a few, and she blinked. Well, those are good choices, for the most part. What others? She asked,
and somehow an hour flew by, carrying them on the wings of conversation.
Suddenly, the clock chimed one, and he rose.
The afternoon is yours to spend in any way that you like.
Where are you going?
To rest my limbs and my lungs.
Yes, well, hopefully you'll read something of quality before I see you again.
He sniffed the air as he walked out of her room. Hopefully you'll take a bath before I see you again.
Sighing, Selena called to her servants to draw her bath. An afternoon of reading on the balcony beckoned. The following dawn, Selena's bedroom door opened, and a familiar stalking gait echoed through the room. Kaol Westfall stopped short when he found the assassin dangling from the beam of the bedroom doorway, repeatedly hoisting herself up to touch her chin to the wooden bar. Sweat soaked her undershirt and ran in rivulets down her pale skin. She'd been exercising for an hour already. Her arms quivered as she lifted herself again. Though she might pretend to be in the middle of the pack, there was no reason to train like it. Even if every repetition made her body scream for her to stop. She wasn't that out of shape. After all, her pickaxe in the mines had been heavy. And it definitely had nothing to do with her fellow competitors walloping her at the race yesterday. She already had an edge on them. She just needed it to be a bit sharper. She didn't pause her exercising as she smiled at him, panting through her clenched teeth. To her surprise, he smiled back. By that afternoon, a vicious rainstorm arrived, and Kaol permitted Selena to walk around the castle with him after she'd finished training with the other champions for the day. Though he spoke little, she was glad to be out of her rooms, and dressed in one of her new gowns, a lovely lilac silk dress with pale pink lace accents and pearl beading. But then they rounded a corner and nearly collided with Caltaine Rompier. The assassin would have grimaced, but she forgot all about Caltaine as her eyes fell upon her companion. It was an Ilway woman. She was stunning, long and lean, each of her features perfectly formed and smooth. Her loose white dress contrasted with her creamy brown skin, and a three-plated gold torque covered much of her chest and neck. Bracelets of ivory and gold glimmered around her wrists, and her feet were sandaled beneath matching anklets. A thin circlet comprising dangling gold and jewels crowned her head. She had two male guards with her, armed to the teeth with an assortment of curved Ilway daggers and swords, both of them studying Kaol and Selena closely, weighing the threat. The Ilway girl was a princess.
"Captain Westfall," Caltaine said, and curtsied.
Beside her, a short man dressed in the red and black garb of a councilman bowed to the pair. The Ilway princess stood perfectly still, her brown eyes wary as she took in Selena and her companion. Selena offered her a slight smile, and the princess stepped closer, her guards tensing slightly. She moved with an easy grace. Caltaine gestured to the girl, poorly hidden distaste written across her beautiful face.
"This is Her Royal Highness, the Princess Nehemia Yitgar of Ilway."
Kaol bowed low. The princess nodded, barely a dip of her chin. Selena knew the name. She had often heard the Ilway slaves in Endovir boast of Nehemia's beauty and bravery. Nehemia, the light of Ilway, who would save them from their plight. Nehemia,
who might someday pose a threat to the King of Otterland's rule over her home country when she ascended to the throne. Nehemia, they whispered, who smuggled information and supplies to the rebel groups hiding in Eelway. But what was she doing here?
And the Lady Lillian, Caltaine added briskly.
Selena dropped into the lowest curtsy she could give without falling, and said in Eelway,
"Welcome to Rifthold, Your Highness."
Princess Nehemia smiled slowly, and the others gaped. The councilman beamed, wiping the sweat from his brow. Why hadn't they sent Nehemia with the Crown Prince, or even Parrington? Why was the princess herded around by Caltaine Rompier?
"Thank you," the princess replied, her voice low. "I imagine you've had a long journey," Selena continued in Eelway. "Have you arrived today, Your Highness?"
Nehemia's guards exchanged glances, and Nehemia's brows rose slightly. Not too many northerners spoke their language.
"Yes, and the queen sent this one," Nehemia jerked her head at Caltaine, "to bring me around with that sweating worm of a man as well."
The princess narrowed her eyes at the small councilman, who wrung his hands and dabbed his forehead with a handkerchief. Perhaps he knew what sort of threat Nehemia posed, but why bring her to the castle? Selena ran her tongue across her teeth, trying not to laugh.
"He seems a bit nervous."
She had to change the subject, or else she'd indeed laugh.
"What do you make of the castle?"
"It's the most foolish thing I've ever seen," Nehemia said, scanning the ceiling as if she could see through the stone and into the glass sections. "I'd sooner enter a castle made of sand." Kaol watched them, somewhat disbelievingly.
"I'm afraid I haven't understood a word you've said," Caltaine interrupted.
Selena tried not to roll her eyes. She'd forgotten the woman was there.
"We,"
the princess said, struggling for the word in the common language,
"were talking with the weather."
"About the weather," Caltaine corrected sharply.
"Watch your mouth," Selena snapped before she could think. Caltaine gave Selena a vicious little smile.
"If she's here to learn our ways, I should correct her, so she doesn't sound foolish."
Here to learn their ways or for something else entirely. The faces of the princess and her guards were unreadable.
"Your Highness," Kaol said, stepping forward, a subtle movement to keep himself between Nehemia and Selena. "Are you having a tour of the castle?"
Nehemia chewed on the words and then looked to Selena, brows high, as if she'd expected a translation by now. A smile tugged on the corners of Selena's lips. No wonder the councilman was sweating so profusely. Nehemia was a force to be reckoned with. Selena translated Kaol's question with ease.
"If you consider this structure of madness to be a castle," Nehemia replied.
Selena turned to Kaol.
"She says yes."
"I never knew so many words to mean one," Caltaine said with faux sweetness.
Selena's nails dug into her palms.
"I'm going to rip your hair out."
Kaol took another step toward Nehemia, effectively blocking Selena's path to Caltaine.
"Smart man."
He put a hand on his chest.
"Your Highness, I am the captain of the Royal Guard. Please allow me to escort you."
Selena translated again, and the princess nodded.
"Get rid of her," she said flatly to Selena,
and then waved a hand toward Caltaine.
"I don't care for her temperament."
"You're dismissed," Selena said to Caltaine, flashing a bright smile.
"The princess tires of your company."
Caltaine started.
"But the queen—"
"If that is her Highness's wish, then it will be granted," Kaol interrupted.
Though his features were a mask of protocol, she could have sworn she glimpsed a glimmer of amusement in his eyes. Selena wanted to hug him. She didn't bother to nod her farewell to Caltaine, as the princess and the councilman joined them, and they strode down the hall, leaving the fuming lady behind.
"Are all of your royal women like that?" the princess said to Selena in Eelway.
"Like Caltaine? Unfortunately, Your Highness."
Nehemia examined the assassin, and Selena knew she was taking in her clothes, her gait, her posture, everything Selena herself had observed about the princess already.
"But you,
You're not like them. How do you know how to speak Ilwe so well?
Selena thought of a lie. Studied it for several years.
You use the intonation of the peasants. Is that taught in your books?
I knew an Ilwe woman who taught it to me.
A slave of yours?
Her tone sharpened, and Kaol flicked his eyes toward them.
No,
Selena said hurriedly. I don't believe in keeping slaves. Something twisted in her gut at the thought of all those slaves she'd left behind in Endovir. All those people doomed to suffer until they died. Just because she'd left Endovir didn't mean Endovir had ceased to be. Nehemia's voice was soft.
Then you are very unlike your court companions.
Selena could only manage a nod to the princess as they turned their attention to the hall ahead. Servants darted past, eyes wide when they beheld the princess and her guards. After a moment of silence, Selena squared her shoulders.
Why are you in Rifthold, if I might ask?
She added, Your Highness.
You don't need to bother calling me that.
The princess toyed with one of the gold bangles around her wrist.
I came at the request of my father, the King of Ilwe, to learn your language and customs so I might better serve Ilwe and my people.
Given what she'd heard of Nehemia, Selena didn't think that was the entirety of it, but she smiled politely as she said,
How long will you remain in Rifthold?
Until my father sends for me again.
She stopped playing with her bracelets as she frowned at the rain pounding the windows.
If I'm fortunate, I'll only be here until spring, unless my father decides that a man from Otterlin might make me a good consort, and then I'll be here until that matter is settled.
Seeing the annoyance in the princess's eyes, Selena felt a shred of pity for whatever man her father chose. A thought struck her, and Selena tilted her head to the side.
Whom would you marry? Prince Dorian?
It was prying and a bit impertinent, and she regretted the question the second it came out. But Nehemia just clicked her tongue.
That pretty boy. He grinned at me far too much, and you should only see how he winked at the other women in the court. I want a husband to warm my bed, and my bed alone.
She glanced sidelong at the assassin, giving her another head-to-toe examination. Selena caught the princess's eyes lingering on the few scars on her hands.
Where are you from, Lillian?
Selena casually hid her hands in the folds of her gown.
Belhaven, a city in Fenharrow. It's a fishing port, smells terrible.
That wasn't a lie. Every time she'd visited Belhaven for a mission, the reek of fish made her gag if she got too near the docks. The princess chuckled.
Rifthold smells terrible. Too many people. At least in Benjali, the sun burns up everything. And my father's river palace smells like lotus blossoms.
Kaol cleared his throat beside them, obviously tired of being excluded from the conversation. And Selena grinned at him.
Don't be so glum, she said in the common tongue. We must cater to the princess.
Stop your gloating, he said, his brows low.
He put a hand on the hilt of his sword, and Nehemia's guard stepped closer to him. Though Kaol might be captain of the guard, Selena didn't doubt for a moment that Nehemia's guards would put him down if he became a threat.
We're only bringing her back to the king's council.
I'm going to have a word with them about allowing Kaltane to show her around.
Do you hunt?
Nehemia interrupted in Ilwe.
Me?
The princess nodded.
No,
Selena said, then switched back to Ilwe.
I'm more of a reader.
Nehemia looked toward a rain-splattered window.
Most of our books were burned 5 years ago, when Otterlin marched in.
It didn't make a difference if the books were about magic. Her voice quieted at the word, even though Kaol and the councilmen couldn't understand them,
or history. They just burned the libraries whole, along with the museums and universities. A familiar ache filled her chest.
Selena nodded.
Ilwe wasn't the only country where that happened.
Something cold and bitter glittered in Nehemia's eyes.
Now most of the books we receive are from Otterlin.
Books in a language I can barely understand. That's also what I must learn while I'm here,
There are so many things.
She stomped her foot, her jewelry clinking.
And I hate these shoes and this miserable dress. I don't care if it's Ilway's silk and I'm supposed to be representing my kingdom. The material's been itching me ever since I put it on.
She stared at Selena's elaborate gown.
How can you stand wearing that enormous thing?
Selena picked at the skirts of her dress. It breaks my ribs, to be honest.
Well, at least I'm not the only one suffering, Nehemia said.
Kaol stopped before a door and informed the 6 sentries posted outside to watch the women and the princess's guards.
What's he doing?
Returning you to the council and ensuring that Kaltane doesn't lead you around again. Nehemia's shoulders slumped slightly.
I've only been here for a day and I wish to leave.
She let out a long sigh through her nose and again turned to the window, as if she could see all the way back to Ilway. Suddenly, she grabbed Selena's hand and squeezed it. Her fingers were surprisingly calloused, in all the spots where the hilt of a sword or dagger might rest. Selena's eyes met with those of the princess, and she dropped her hand.
Perhaps the rumors were correct about her association with the rebels in Ilway.
Will you keep me company while I'm here, Lady Lillian?
Selena blinked at the request, feeling, despite herself, honored.
Of course. When I'm available, I'll gladly attend you.
I have attendants. I wish for someone to talk to.
Selena couldn't help it. She beamed. Kaol entered into the hallway once more and bowed to the princess.
The council would like to see you, Selena translated.
Nehemia let out a low groan, but thanked Kaol before turning to Selena.
I'm glad we met, Lady Lillian,
Nehemia said, her eyes bright.
Peace be with you.
And with you,
the assassin murmured, watching her leave.
She never had many friends, and the ones she had often disappointed her,
sometimes with devastating consequences, as she learned that summer with the silent assassins of the Red Desert. After that, she'd sworn never to trust girls again, especially girls with agendas and power of their own, girls who would do anything to get what they wanted. But as the door closed behind the ivory train of the Ilway princess, Selena wondered if she'd been wrong. Kaol Westfall watched the assassin eat lunch, her eyes darting from one plate to the next. She had immediately stripped from her gown upon entering her rooms, and now sat in a rose and jade dressing robe that suited her well.
You're awfully quiet today, she said, her mouth full of food.
Would she never stop eating?
She ate more than anyone he knew, including his guards. She had multiple helpings of every course at each meal.
Enthralled by the Princess Nehemia?
The words were barely distinguishable from her chewing.
That headstrong girl?
He immediately regretted the remark as her eyes narrowed. A lecture was coming on, and he was in no mood to be patronized. He had more important things on his mind. Before departing this morning, the king hadn't taken any of the guards he'd suggested he bring on his journey, and refused to say where he was going, or to accept his offer of accompaniment. Not to mention the fact that a few of the royal hounds had gone missing, only to have their half-eaten remains found in the northern wing of the palace.
That was worrisome. Who would do such a gruesome thing?
And what's wrong with headstrong girls? She pressed. Other than the fact that they're not wooden-headed ninnies who can only open their mouths to give orders and gossip.
I just prefer a certain type of woman.
Thankfully, it was the right thing to say, because she batted her eyelashes.
And what type of woman is that?
Not an arrogant assassin.
She pouted.
Suppose I wasn't an assassin. Would you fancy me then?
No.
Would you prefer Lady Kaltane?
Don't be a fool.
It was easy to be mean, but it was also getting far too easy to be nice. He took a bite of bread. She watched him, her head angled. He sometimes felt that she looked at him the way a cat regards a mouse. He just wondered how long it would take for her to pounce. She shrugged and took a bite from an apple.
There was something girlish about her, too.
Oh, he couldn't stand her contradictions.
You're staring, Captain.
He almost apologized, but stopped. She was a haughty, vulgar, utterly impertinent assassin. He wished for the months to fly by, for her to be appointed champion, and then, once her years of servitude were over, to be gone. He hadn't slept well since they'd taken her out of Endovier. "You have food in your teeth," he said. She picked it out with a sharp nail and turned her head to the window. The rain slid down the glass. Was she looking at the rain or something beyond? He sipped from his goblet. Despite her arrogance, she was clever and relatively kind and somewhat charming. But where was that writhing darkness? Why didn't it show itself so he could just throw her into the dungeon and call off this ridiculous competition? There was something great and deadly concealed within her, and he didn't like it. He'd be ready. When the time came, he'd be waiting. He just wondered which one of them would survive. Chapter 14. For the next 4 days, Selena awoke before dawn to train in her room, using whatever she could to exercise. Chairs, the doorway, even her billiards table and cue sticks. The balls made for remarkable balance tools. Around dawn, Kaol usually showed up for breakfast. Afterward, they ran through the game park, where he kept pace at her side. Autumn had fully come, and the wind smelled of crisp leaves and snow. Kaol never said anything when she doubled over, hands on her knees, and vomited up her breakfast. Nor did he comment on the fact that she could go farther and farther each day without stopping for breath. Once they'd finished their run, they trained in a private room far from her competitors' eyes. Until, that is, she collapsed to the ground and cried that she was about to die of hunger and fatigue. At lessons, the knives remained Selena's favorite, but the wooden staff became dear. Naturally, it had to do with the fact that she could freely whack him and not chop off an arm. Since her initial meeting with Princess Nehemia, she hadn't seen or heard from the princess, not even chatter from the servants. Kaol always came for lunch, and afterward she joined the other champions for a few more hours of training under Brello's watchful eye. Most of their training was just to make sure they could actually use weapons. And, of course, she kept her head down throughout it all, doing enough to keep Brello from critiquing her, but not enough to make him praise her the way he did Kane. Kane! How she loathed him! Brello practically worshipped the man, and even the other champions nodded their respect when he passed by. No one bothered to comment on how perfect her form was. Was this how the other assassins at the Assassin's Keep had felt? All those years she had spent hogging Arabin Hommel's attention? But here, it was hard to focus when Kane was nearby, taunting and sneering, waiting for her to make one mistake. Hopefully he wouldn't distract her at the first elimination test. Brello hadn't given them any indication what they might be tested for, and Kaol was just as clueless. The day before the first test, she knew something was wrong long before she got to the training hall. Kaol hadn't shown up for breakfast, but rather sent her guards to bring her to the training hall to practice on her own. He didn't show up for lunch, either. And by the time she was escorted to the hall, she was brimming with questions. Without Kaol to stand near, she lingered beside a pillar, watching the competitors file in, flanked by guards and their trainers. Brello wasn't there yet. Another oddity. And there were far too many guards in the training hall today. What do you suppose this is about? Knox Owen, the young thief from Perinth, asked from beside her. After proving himself somewhat skilled during practice, many of the other competitors had sought him out, but he still opted to keep to himself. "Captain Westfall didn't train me this morning," she offered. What was the harm in admitting that? Knox held out his hand. Knox Owen. "I know who you are," she said, but shook his hand anyway. His grip was solid, his hand calloused and scarred. He'd seen his fair share of action. "Good. I felt a bit invisible with that hulking lout showing off these past few days." He jerked his chin toward Kane, who was in the middle of examining his bulging biceps. A large ring of black iridescent stone glimmered on Kane's finger. Strange that he'd wear it to practice. Knox went on. "Did you see Varen? He
He looks like he's going to be sick.
He pointed to the loud-mouthed thief that Selena wanted to knock out cold. Normally, Varen could be found near Kane, taunting the other champions. But today he stood alone by the window, face pale and eyes wide.
I heard him talking to Kane, said a timid voice behind them, and they found Paelor, the youngest assassin, standing nearby. She'd spent half a day watching Paelor, and while she only pretended to be mediocre, he truly could use the training.
Assassin indeed. His voice hasn't even deepened yet. How did he wind up here?
What'd he say?
Knox put his hands in his pockets. His clothes weren't as ratty as the other competitors. The mere fact that she'd actually heard his name implied he must have been a good thief in Perinth. Paelor's freckled face paled a bit.
Bill Chastain, the Eye Eater, was found stone-cold dead this morning.
A champion was dead? And a notorious killer at that.
How? She demanded.
Paelor swallowed hard.
Varen said it wasn't pretty, like someone ripped him wide open. He passed the body on his way here.
Knox cursed under his breath, and Selena studied the other champions. A hush had fallen on the group, and clusters of them stood together, whispering.
Varen's story was spreading fast.
Paelor went on.
He said Chastain's body was in ribbons.
A chill snaked down her spine, but she shook her head just as a guard entered and told them that Brello had ordered them to have free rein of the training hall today and to practice what they wanted. Needing to distract herself from the image forming in her mind, she didn't bother to say goodbye to Knox and Paelor as she strode to the weapons rack and gathered a belt strapped with throwing knives. She took up a place near the archery targets. Knox joined her a moment later and started firing his knives at the target. He hit the second ring, but never got any closer to the center. His skill with knives wasn't nearly as good as his archery. She drew a dagger from the belt.
Who would have killed one of the champions so brutally? And how had they gotten away with it, if the body was in the hall? This castle was swarming with guards.
A champion was dead, and just a day before their first test. Would this start a pattern? Her focus narrowed to the small black dot in the center of the target. She studied her breathing as she cocked her arm, letting her wrist go loose. The sounds of the other champions faded. The blackness of the bullseye beckoned, and as she exhaled, she sent the dagger flying. It sparkled, a shooting star of steel. She smiled grimly as it struck home. Beside her, Knox swore colorfully when his dagger hit the third ring on his target, and her smile broadened, despite the shredded corpse that lay somewhere in the castle. Selena drew another dagger, but paused as Varen called to her from the ring where he sparred with Kane.
Circus tricks ain't much use when you're the king's champion.
She shifted her gaze to him, but kept positioned toward the target.
You'd be better off on your back, learning tricks useful to a woman. In fact, I can teach you some tonight if you'd like.
He laughed, and Kane joined with him. Selena gripped the hilt of a dagger so hard that it hurt.
Don't listen to them,
Knox murmured. He tossed another dagger, missing the bullseye again.
They wouldn't know the first thing to do with a woman, even if one walked stark naked into their bedroom.
Selena threw her dagger, and the blade clanged as it landed a hair's breadth from the one she'd already embedded in the bullseye. Knox's dark brows rose, accentuating his gray eyes.
He couldn't have been older than 25.
You've got impressive aim.
For a girl? She challenged.
No, he said, and threw another dagger. For anyone.
The dagger yet again missed the mark. He stalked to the target, yanking out all six daggers and shoving them in their sheaths before returning to the throwing line. Selena cleared her throat.
You're standing wrong, she said,
quietly enough so the other champions couldn't hear.
And you're holding your wrist incorrectly.
Knox lowered his arm. She took up her stance.
Legs like this, she said.
He studied her for a moment, then positioned his legs similarly.
Bend slightly at the knees, shoulders back, loosen your wrist. Throw when you exhale.
She demonstrated for him, and her dagger found its mark.
Show me again, Nock said appreciatively.
She did so, and struck the target. Then she threw with her left hand, and fought her whoop of triumph as the blade sank into the handle of another dagger. Nox focused on the target as he brought up his arm.
Well, you've just put me to shame, he said, laughing under his breath as he lifted his dagger higher.
Keep your wrist even looser, was her reply. It's all about how you snap it.
Nox obeyed, and as he exhaled a long breath, his dagger flew.
It didn't hit the bullseye, but it came within the inner circle.
His brows rose. That's a bit of an improvement.
Just a bit, she said, and held her ground as he gathered their knives from the two targets and handed hers back. She sheathed them in her belt. You're from Perinth, right? She asked.
Though she'd never been to Perinth, Terrasen's second-largest city, the mention of her homeland still spiked a bolt of fear and guilt. It had been 10 years since the royal family had been butchered, 10 years since the King of Otterlin had marched his army in, 10 years since Terrasen met its doom with bowed heads and silence. She shouldn't have mentioned it. She didn't know why she mentioned it, actually.
She schooled her features into polite interest as Nox nodded.
This is my first time out of Perinth, actually.
You said you were from Belhaven, didn't you?
My father is a merchant, she lied. And what does he think about a daughter who steals jewels for a living?
She conceded a smile and hurled a knife into the target. He won't be inviting me home for a while, that's for certain.
Ah, you're in good hands, though. You've got the best trainer out of anyone. I've seen you two running at dawn. I have to beg mine to put down the bottle and let me train outside of lessons.
He inclined his head toward his trainer, who sat against the wall, the hood of his cape over his eyes.
Sleeping. Yet again.
The captain of the guard is a pain in my ass at times, she said, chucking another knife. But you're right. He's the best.
Nox was quiet for a moment before he said, The next time we pair off for lessons, find me, will you?
Why?
She reached for another dagger, but found she'd depleted her stock again.
Nox threw another dagger, and it hit the bullseye this time.
Because my gold's on you winning this whole damn thing.
She smiled a little. Let's hope you won't be eliminated at the test tomorrow. She scanned the training hall for any sign of the challenge to come the following morning, but found nothing out of the ordinary. The other competitors remained mostly quiet, save for Cain and Varen, and many of them were pale as snow. And let's hope neither of us winds up like the Eye Eater, she added, and meant it.
Don't you ever do anything other than read, said Kaol.
She started from her chair on the balcony as he took a seat beside her. The late afternoon sunlight warmed her face, and the last balmy breeze of autumn rushed through her unbound hair. She stuck out her tongue. Shouldn't you be looking into the Eye Eater's murder? He never came to her rooms after lunch.
Something dark flitted across his eyes. That's none of your business. And don't try to pry details from me about it, he added as she opened her mouth.
He pointed to the book in her lap.
I saw at lunch that you're reading The Wind and the Rain, and I forgot to ask what you thought.
He'd really come to talk about a book when a champion's corpse had been found that morning? It's a bit dense, she admitted, holding up the brown volume in her lap. When he didn't reply, she asked, Why are you really here?
I had a long day.
She massaged an ache in her knee. Because of Bill's murder?
Because the prince dragged me into a council meeting that lasted for 3 hours, he said, a muscle in his jaw feathering.
I thought His Royal Highness was your friend.
He is.
How long have you been friends? He paused, and she knew he was contemplating how she might use the information against him, weighing the risk of telling her the truth. She was about to snap at him when he said,
Since we were young. We were the only boys of our age in the castle, at least of high rank. We had lessons together, played together, trained together. But when I was 13, my father moved my family back to our home in Aniel.
The city on the Silver Lake?
It somehow made sense that Kaol's family ruled Aniel.
The citizens of Aniel were warriors from birth and had been guardians against the hordes of the wild men from the White Fang Mountains for generations. Thankfully, things had gotten a little easier for the warriors of Aniel in the past 10 years. The White Fang Mountain men had been one of the first peoples to be put down by Otterland's conquering armies, and very rarely did their rebels make it to slavery. She'd heard tales of mountain men killing their wives and children, then themselves, rather than be taken by Otterlin. The thought of Kaol going up against hundreds of them, against men built like Cain, made her a little sick.
"Yes," Kaol said, fiddling with the long hunting knife at his side. "I was slotted to join the Royal Council, like my father. He wanted me to spend some time among my own people, and learn whatever it is councilmen learn. He said that with the king's army now in the mountains, we could move our interests from fighting the mountain folk to politics."
His golden eyes were distant.
"But I missed Rifthold."
"So you ran away?" She marveled that he was volunteering this much. Hadn't he refused to tell her almost anything about himself while traveling from Endovir?
"Ran away?" Kaol chuckled. "No. Dorian convinced the captain of the guard to take me as his apprentice, with the help of Brello. My father refused, so I abdicated my title as Lord of Aniel to my brother and left the next day."
The captain's silence suggested what he could not say, that his father hadn't objected. What of his mother? He loosed a long breath.
"What about you, then?"
She crossed her arms. "I thought you didn't want to know anything about me." There was a ghost of a smile on his face as he watched the sky melt into a smear of tangerine.
"What do your parents make of their daughter being Otterland's assassin?"
"My parents are dead," she said. "They died when I was 8.
"So you..."
Her heart thundered in her chest. "I was born in Terrasen, then I became an assassin, then I went to Endovir, and now I'm here. And that's it." Silence fell. Then he asked,
"Where'd you get that scar on your right hand?"
She didn't need to glance at the jagged line that ran along the top of her hand, just above her wrist. She flexed her fingers. "When I was 12, Erobin Hommel decided I wasn't nearly as skilled at swordplay with my left hand, so he gave me a choice. Either he could break my right hand or I could do it myself." The phantom memory of the blinding pain lanced through her hand. "That night, I put my hand against a doorframe and slammed the door shut on it. I split my hand wide open and broke 2 bones. It took months to heal. Months during which I could only use my left hand." She gave him a vicious smile. "I bet Brello never did that to you."
"No," he said quietly. "No, he didn't."
He cleared his throat and stood.
"The first test is tomorrow. Are you ready?"
"Of course," she lied. He remained standing there for a moment longer, studying her.
"I'll see you tomorrow morning," he said, and left.
In the silence that followed in his wake, she contemplated his story, the paths that had made them so different, but so similar. She wrapped her arms around herself, a cold wind picking up the skirts of her dress and blowing them behind her. Chapter 15. Though she'd never admit it, Selena didn't really know what to expect at their first test. With all the training over the past 5 days and fiddling with various weapons and techniques, her body ached. Which was another thing she'd never admit, even though hiding the throbbing pain in her limbs was nearly impossible. As Selena and Kaol entered the giant sparring room in the morning, she glanced at her competitors and remembered she wasn't the only one who hadn't a clue what to expect. A towering black curtain had been swept across half of the room, blocking the other half from sight. Whatever lay beyond that curtain, she realized, was to decide the fate of one of them. The normal ruckus had been replaced by a rustling quiet, and rather than mill about, the competitors lingered by their trainer's sides. She kept close to Kaol, which wasn't a change from the ordinary. But the sponsors atop the mezzanine looking over the black and white checkered floor were... Her throat tightened as her gaze met with that of the Crown Prince. Aside from sending her his books, she hadn't seen or heard from him since the meeting with the king. He flashed her a grin, those sapphire eyes gleaming in the morning light. She offered him a tight smile in return and quickly looked away. Brello stood by the curtain, a scarred hand upon his sword, and Selena studied the scene. Someone stepped to her side. She knew who it was before he spoke. "It's a bit dramatic, don't you think?" She glanced sidelong at Knox. Kaol tensed next to her, and she could feel him watching the thief closely, no doubt wondering if she and Knox were formulating some escape plan that would include the deaths of every member of the royal family.
"After 5 days of mindless training," she replied quietly, all too aware that very few people were speaking in the hall. "I'm glad for a bit of excitement."
Knox laughed under his breath.
"What do you think it is?"
She shrugged, keeping her attention on the curtain. More and more competitors were arriving, and soon the clock would strike 9, the time when the test would begin. Even if she knew what was behind the curtain, she certainly wouldn't help him.
"Hopefully it's a pack of man-eating wolves that we have to take on with our bare hands."
She looked at him fully now, a half-smile on her lips.
"Wouldn't that be fun?"
Kaol subtly cleared his throat. Now was not the time for talking. She stuffed her hands into the pockets of her black pants.
"Best of luck,"
she said to Knox before she strode toward the curtain, Kaol following her. When they were far enough away, she asked under her breath,
"No idea what's behind that curtain?"
Kaol shook his head. She adjusted the thick leather belt slung low across her hips. It was the kind of belt intended to bear the weight of multiple weapons. Its lightness now only reminded her of what she'd lost and what she had to gain. The death of the Eye Eater yesterday had been fortunate in one aspect. One less man to compete with. She glanced up at Dorian. He could probably see what was behind the curtain from his place on the mezzanine.
Why not help her cheat a little?
She flicked her attention to the other sponsors, noblemen in fine clothing, and ground her teeth at the sight of Parrington. He smirked as he watched Kane, who was stretching out his muscular arms. Had he already told Kane what was beyond the curtain? Brello cleared his throat.
"Attention now," he called to them.
All of the competitors tried to look calm as he strode to the center of the curtain.
"Your first test has arrived."
He grinned broadly, as if whatever the curtain concealed was going to torment the hell out of them.
"As His Majesty has ordered, one of you will be eliminated today. One of you will be deemed unworthy."
"Just get on with it," she thought, her jaw clenched tight.
As if he'd read her thoughts, Brello snapped his fingers, and a guard standing by the wall pulled the curtain back. Inch by inch, it swayed until... Selena bit down her laugh.
"Archery? It was an archery contest?" "Rules are simple," Brello said.
Behind him, 5 targets were staggered at various distances throughout the hall.
"You get 5 shots, 1 per target. The one with the worst aim goes home."
Some competitors began murmuring, but it was all she could do to keep from beaming. Unfortunately, Kane didn't bother to hide his triumphant grin. Why couldn't he have been the champion who was found dead?
"You'll go one at a time," Brello said,
and behind them a pair of soldiers rolled out a card of bows and quivers loaded with arrows.
"Form a line at the table to determine your order. The test begins now."
She expected them to rush to the long table stacked with identical bows and arrows, but apparently none of the 21 other competitors were in much of a hurry to go home. Selena made to join the forming line, but Kaol grasped her shoulder.
"Don't show off," he warned.
She smiled sweetly and pried his fingers off her.
"I'll try not to," she purred, and joined the line.
It was an enormous leap of faith to give them arrows, even if the tips were blunted. A dull head wouldn't stop it from going through Parrington's throat, or Dorian's, if she wanted. Though the thought was entertaining, she kept her attention on the competitors. With 22 champions and 5 shots each, the test took a dreadfully long time. Thanks to Kaol pulling her aside, she'd been in the back of the line. Not dead last, but 3 from the end. Far enough back that she had to watch everyone else go before her, including Kane. The other competitors did well enough. The giant circular targets were composed of 5 colored rings, yellow marking the center, with only a tiny black dot to mark the bullseye. Each target got smaller the further back it was placed, and because the room was so long, the final target was nearly 70 yards away. Selena ran her fingers along the smooth curve of her U-bow. Archery was one of the first skills Aerobin had taught her, a staple of any assassin's training. 2 of the assassins further proved it with easy, skilled shots, though they didn't hit the bullseyes, and their shots got sloppier the farther the target. Whoever their masters had been, they'd known what they were teaching. Paylor, the gangly assassin, wasn't yet strong enough to manage a longbow, and barely made any shots. When he finished, his eyes gleaming with resentment, the champion sniggered, and Kane laughed the loudest. Brello's face was grim.
"Didn't anyone ever teach you how to use a bow, boy?"
Paylor lifted his head, glaring at the weapons master with surprising brazenness.
"I'm more skilled in poisons."
"Poisons?"
Brello threw his hands up.
"The king wants a champion, and you couldn't shoot a cow in a pasture."
The weapons master waved Paylor off. The other champions laughed again, and Selena wanted nothing more than to smile with them. But Paylor took a shuddering breath, his shoulders relaxing, and joined the other finished competitors. If he wound up being eliminated, where would they bring him? To prison? Or some other hellhole? Despite herself, Selena felt badly for the boy. His shots hadn't been that bad. It was Nox, actually, who surprised her most, with 3 bullseyes into the nearer targets and the 2 final shots along the border of the inner ring. Perhaps she should consider him for an ally. From the way the other competitors watched him as he strode to the back of the room, she knew they were thinking the same thing. Grave, the repulsive assassin, did fine, she supposed. 4 bullseyes and the final shot right on the border of the innermost ring. But then Kane stepped up to the white line painted at the back of the room, drew back his U-bow, his black ring glinting, and fired. Again and again and again, within the span of a few seconds. And when the sound of his final shot stopped echoing in the suddenly silent chamber, Selena's stomach turned over. 5 bullseyes. Her one consolation was that none of them had been on that black dot, the absolute center. 1 had come close, though. For some reason, the line started moving quickly. All she could think about was Kane. Kane getting applauded by Parrington. Kane getting slapped on the back by Brello. Kane getting all of that praise and attention, not because he was a mountain of muscle, but because he actually deserved it. Suddenly, Selena found herself standing at the white line, looking at the vast length of the room before her. Some of the men chuckled, albeit quietly, and she kept her head held high as she reached over her shoulder for an arrow and knocked it into her bow. They'd done some archery practice a few days earlier, and she'd been excellent, or as excellent as she could be without attracting attention. And she'd killed men from longer shots than the farthest target. Clean shots, too. Right through the throat. She tried to swallow, but her mouth was dry.
"I am Selena Sardothian, Otterland's assassin. If these men knew who I was, they'd stop laughing. I am Selena Sardothian. I am going to win. I will not be afraid."
She pulled back her bow, the sore muscles in her arm aching with the effort. She shut out noise, shut out movement, shut out anything other than the sound of her breathing as her focus narrowed on the first target. She took a steady breath. As she exhaled, she let the arrow fly. Bullseye. The tightness in her stomach abated, and she sighed through her nose. It wasn't an absolute bullseye, but she hadn't been aiming for it anyway. Some men stopped laughing, but she paid them no heed as she knocked another arrow and fired at the second target. She aimed for the edge of the innermost ring, which she hit with deadly precision. She could have made an entire circle of arrows, if she'd wanted, and if she'd had enough ammunition. She got another bullseye on the third target, aiming for the edge but landing within the border. She did the same for the fourth target, but aimed for the opposite side of the bullseye. Where she aimed, the arrow met its mark. As she reached for her last arrow, she heard one of the competitors, a red-haired mercenary named Renault, snigger. She clenched her bow tightly enough for the wood to groan and pulled back her final shot. The target was little more than a blur of color, so far back that its bullseye was a grain of sand in the vastness of the room. She couldn't see the little dot in its center, the dot that no one had yet to touch, even Kane. Selena's arm trembled with effort as she pulled the string back a bit farther and fired. The arrow hit the absolute center, obliterating the black dot. They stopped laughing. No one said anything to her when she stalked away from the line and tossed her bow back onto the cart. Kaol only scowled at her. Obviously, she hadn't been that inconspicuous. But Dorian smiled. She sighed and joined the competitors waiting for the competition to finish, keeping well away from all of them. When their marks were compared by Brello himself, one of the army soldiers, not young Paylor, wound up being eliminated. But though she hadn't lost by any means, Selena couldn't stand, absolutely could not stand, the feeling that she hadn't really won anything at all. Chapter 16. Despite her attempt to keep her breathing steady, Selena gasped for air as she ran beside Kaol in the game park. If he was winded, he didn't show it, other than the gleam of sweat on his face and the dampness of his white shirt. They ran toward a hill, its top still shrouded in morning mist. Her legs buckled at the sight of the incline, and her stomach rose in her throat. Selena let out a loud gasp to get Kaol's attention before she slowed to a stop and braced her hands against a tree trunk. She took a shuddering breath, holding on tightly to the tree as she vomited. She hated the warmth of the tears that leaked from her eyes, but couldn't wipe them away as she heaved again, gagging. Kaol stood nearby, just watching. She leaned her brow into her upper arm, calming her breathing, willing her body to ease. It had been 3 days since the first test, 10 since her arrival in Rifthold, and she was still horribly out of shape. The next elimination was in 4 days, and though training had resumed as usual, she had started waking up a little earlier than normal. She would not lose to Kane, or Renault, or any of them. "Done?" Kaol asked. She lifted her head to give him a withering glare, but everything spun, dragging her down with it, and she retched again. "I told you not to eat before we left."
"Are you done being smug?"
"Are you done vomiting your guts up?"
"For the time being," she snapped. "Perhaps I won't be so courteous next time and I'll just vomit all over you instead."
"If you can catch me," he said with a half smile. She wanted to punch the smirk off his face, but as she took a step, her knees shook and she put her hands against the tree again, waiting for the retching to renew. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw him looking at her back, most of which was exposed by her damp white undershirt. She stood.
"Are you enjoying looking at my scars?"
He sucked on his lower lip for a moment.
"When did you get those?"
She knew he meant the three enormous lines that ran down her back.
"When do you think?" she said.
He didn't reply, and she looked up at the canopy of leaves above them. A morning breeze sent them all shuddering, ripping a few from where they clung to the skeletal branches. "Those three I received my first day in Endovir."
"What did you do to deserve it?"
"Deserve it?"
She laughed sharply. "No one deserves to be whipped like an animal." He opened his mouth, but she cut him off. "I arrived in Endovir, and they dragged me into the center of the camp and tied me between the whipping posts. 21 lashes." She stared at him without entirely seeing him, as the ash-gray sky turned into the bleakness of Endovir, and the hiss of the wind became the sighing of slaves. "That was before I had befriended any of the other slaves, and I spent that first night wondering if I would make it until morning, if my back would become infected, or if I would bleed out and die before I knew what was happening."
"No one helped you?"
"Only in the morning. A young woman slipped me a tin of salve while we were waiting in line for breakfast. I never got to thank her. Later that day, 4 overseers raped and killed her." She clenched her hands into her fists as her eyes stung.
The day I snapped, I stopped by their section of the mines to repay them for what they did to her.
Something frozen rushed through her veins. They died too quickly.
But you were a woman in Andovier,
Kael said, his voice rough and quiet.
No one ever...
He trailed off, unable to form the word. She gave him a slow, bitter smile. They were afraid of me to begin with.
And after the day I almost touched the wall, none of them dared to come too close to me. But if one guard tried to get too friendly, well, he'd become the example that reminded the others I could easily snap again if I felt like it.
The wind stirred around them, ripping strands of hair from her braid. She didn't need to voice her other suspicion, that perhaps somehow Aerobin had bribed the guards in Andovier for her safety. We each survive in our own way.
Selena didn't quite understand the softness in the look he gave her as he nodded. She only stared at him a moment longer before she burst into a run, up toward the hill, where the first rays of sunshine began to peek through. The following afternoon, the champions stood gathered around Brello, who lectured them on different weapons and other nonsense she'd learned years ago and didn't need to hear again. She was just contemplating whether she could sleep while standing up when, from the corner of her eye, a sudden movement by the balcony doors caught her attention. Selena turned just in time to see one of the larger champions, one of the discharged soldiers, shove a nearby guard, knocking him to the ground. The guard's head hit the marble with a crack, and he was instantly unconscious. She didn't dare to move. None of the champions did. As the man hurtled toward the door, toward the gardens and escape. But Kael and his men moved so fast that the fleeting champion didn't have time to touch the glass door before an arrow went clean through his throat. Silence fell, and half of the guards encircled the champions, hands on their swords, while the others, Kael included, rushed to the dead champion and fallen guard. Bows groaned as the archers on the mezzanine pulled their strings taut. Selena kept still, as did Nox, who was standing close beside her. One wrong movement and a spooked guard could kill her. Even Kane didn't breathe too deeply. Through the wall of champions, guards, and their weapons, Selena beheld Kael kneeling by the unconscious guard. No one touched the fallen champion, who lay face down, his hand still outstretched toward the glass door. Sven had been his name, though she didn't know why he'd been expelled from the army.
Gods above.
Nox breathed, so softly that his lips barely moved.
They just killed him.
She thought about telling him to shut up, but even snapping at him seemed risky. Some of the other champions were murmuring to each other, but no one dared to take a step.
I knew they were serious about not letting us leave, but...
Nox swore, and she felt him glance sidelong at her.
I was granted immunity by my sponsor. He tracked me down and said I wouldn't go to prison if I lost the competition.
At that point, she knew he was speaking more to himself, and when she didn't respond, Nox stopped talking.
She stared and stared at the dead champion.
What had made Sven risk it? And why here, right now? There were still 3 days until their second test. What had made this moment so special? The day she snapped in Andovier, she hadn't been thinking about freedom. No, she'd picked the time and place and started swinging. She'd never meant to escape. The sunlight shone through the doors, illuminating the champion's splattered blood like stained glass. Maybe he'd realized he had no chance of winning, and that this kind of death was far better than returning to whatever place he'd come from. If he'd wanted to escape, he would have waited until dark when he was away from everyone at the competition. Sven had wanted to prove a point, she understood, and understood only because of that day she had come within a fingertip of touching the wall at Andovier. Otterlin could take their freedom. It could destroy their lives and beat and break and whip them. It could force them into ridiculous contests. But criminal or not, they were still human. Dying, rather than playing in the king's game, was the only choice left to him. Still staring at his outstretched hand, forever pointing toward an unreachable horizon, Selena said a silent prayer for the dead champion and wished him well. Chapter 17. with heavy eyelids. Dorian Havilliard tried not to slouch as he sat upon his throne. Music and chatter flitted through the air, wooing him to sleep. Why must his mother insist on his attending court? Even the weekly afternoon visit was too much. But it was better than studying the corpse of the Eye-Eater, which Kaol had spent the past few days investigating. He'd worry about that later, if it became an issue. Which it wouldn't, if Kaol was looking into it. It had probably just been a drunken brawl. And then there was the champion who'd tried to escape this afternoon. Dorian shuddered at the thought of what it must have been like to witness it, and at the mess Kaol had to deal with, from the injured soldier to the sponsor who'd lost his champion, to the dead man himself. What had his father been thinking when he decided to host this contest? Dorian glanced at his mother, seated on a throne beside his own. She certainly didn't know anything about it, and probably would have been horrified if she knew what kind of criminals were living under her roof. His mother was still beautiful, though her face was a bit wrinkled and cracked with powder, and her auburn hair had a few silver streaks. Today she was swathed in yards of forest green velvet and floating scarves and shawls of gold, and her crown upheld a sparkling veil that gave Dorian the distinct impression she was wearing a tent upon her head. Before them, the nobility strutted across the floor of the court, gossiping, scheming, seducing. An orchestra played minuets in a corner, and servants slipped through the gathered nobles in a dance of their own as they refilled and cleared plates and cups and silverware. Dorian felt like an ornament. Of course, he was wearing an outfit of his mother's choosing, sent to him this morning. A vest of dark bluish-green velvet, with almost ridiculously billowy white sleeves bursting from the blue and white striped shoulders. The pants, mercifully, were light gray, though his chestnut suede boots looked too new for masculine pride.
"Dorian, my dear, you're sulking."
He gave Queen Georgina an apologetic grin.
"I received a letter from Holland. He sends his love."
"Did he say anything of interest?"
"Only that he loathes school and wishes to come home."
"He says that every letter." The Queen of Otterland sighed.
"If your father didn't prevent me, I'd have him home."
"He's better off at school." When it came to Holland, the farther away he was, the better. Georgina surveyed her son.
"You were better behaved. You never disobeyed your tutors. Oh, my poor Holland. When I am dead, you'll care for him, won't you?"
"Dead? Mother, you're only—"
"I know how old I am."
She waved a ring-encrusted hand.
"Which is why you must marry, and soon."
"Marry?" Dorian ground his teeth. "Marry whom?"
"Dorian, you are the crown prince, and already 19 at that. Do you wish to become king and die without an heir so Holland can take the throne?"
He didn't answer.
"I thought so."
After a moment, she said,
"There are plenty of young women who might make a good wife. Though a princess would be preferred."
"There are no princesses left," he said a bit sharply.
"Except for the Princess Nehemia."
She laughed and put a hand on his. "Oh, don't worry. I wouldn't force you to marry her. I'm surprised your father allows for her to still bear the title." "The impetuous, haughty girl. Do you know she refused to wear the dress I sent her?" "I'm sure the princess has her reasons," Dorian said warily, disgusted by his mother's unspoken prejudice. "I've only spoken to her once, but she seemed lively."
"Then perhaps you shall marry her."
His mother laughed again before he could respond. Dorian smiled weakly. He still couldn't figure out why his father had granted the King of Ilway's request that his daughter visit their court to become better acquainted with the ways of Otterlin. As far as ambassadors went, Nehemia wasn't exactly the best choice. Not when he'd heard rumors of her support of the Ilway rebels and her efforts to shut down the labor camp at Calicalla. Dorian couldn't blame her for that, though. Not after he'd seen the horror that was in Dovir and the destruction it had wrought upon Selena Sardothian's body. But his father never did anything without a reason, and from the few words he'd exchanged with Nehemia, he couldn't help but wonder if she had her own motivations in coming here, too.
"It's a pity that Lady Caltaine has an agreement with Duke Parrington,"
his mother went on.
She's such a beautiful girl, and so polite. Perhaps she has a sister.
Dorian crossed his arms, swallowing his repulsion. Caltaine stood at the far end of the court, and he was all too aware of her eyes creeping over every inch of him. He shifted in his seat, his tailbone aching from sitting for so long.
"What about Elise?"
the queen said, indicating a blonde young woman clad in lavender.
"She's very beautiful, and can be quite playful."
"As I've already learned."
"Elise bores me," he said.
"Oh, Dorian,"
she put a hand over her heart.
"You're not about to inform me that you wish to marry for love, are you? Love does not guarantee a successful marriage."
He was bored. Bored of these women. Bored of these cavaliers who masqueraded as companions. Bored of everything. He'd hoped his journey to Endovir would quell that boredom, and that he'd be glad to return home. But he found home to be the same. The same ladies still looked at him with pleading eyes. The same serving girls still winked at him. The same councilmen still slipped pieces of potential legislation under his door with hopeful notes. And his father would always be preoccupied with conquest, and wouldn't stop until every continent bore Otterland's flag. Even gambling over the so-called champions had become achingly dull. It was clear Cain and Selena would ultimately face each other, and until then, well, the other champions weren't worth his time.
"You're sulking again. Are you upset over something, my pet? Have you heard from Rosamond? Oh, my poor child, how she broke your heart."
The queen shook her head.
"Though it was over a year ago."
He didn't reply. He didn't want to think about Rosamond, or about the boorish husband she'd left him for. Some nobles started dancing, weaving in and out among each other. Many were his age, but he somehow felt as if there existed a vast difference between them. He didn't feel older, nor did he feel any wiser, but rather he felt as if there were something inside him that didn't fit in with their merriment, with their willing ignorance of the world outside the castle. It went beyond his title. He had enjoyed their company early in his adolescence, but it had become apparent that he'd always be a step away. The worst of it was that they didn't seem to notice he was different, or that he felt different. Were it not for Kaol, he would have felt immensely lonely.
"Well," his mother said, snapping her ivory fingers at one of her ladies-in-waiting, "I'm sure your father has you busy, but when you find a moment to bother thinking of me and the fate of your kingdom, look through this."
His mother's lady curtsied as she extended to him a folded piece of paper, stamped with his mother's blood-red seal. Dorian ripped it open, and his stomach twisted at the long line of names. All ladies of noble blood, all of marriageable age.
"What is this?" he demanded, fighting the urge to rip up the paper.
She gave him a winning smile.
"A list of potential brides. Any one of them would be suitable to take the crown. And all, I've been told, are quite capable of producing heirs."
Dorian stuffed the list of names into the pocket of his vest. The restlessness within him would not cease.
"I'll think about it," he said, and before she could reply, he stepped from the awning-covered podium.
Immediately, five young women flocked to him and began asking him to dance, how he fared, if he would attend the Samhuin ball. Around and around their words circled, and Dorian stared at them blankly. What were their names? He peered over their jewel-encrusted heads to find the path to the door. He'd suffocate if he remained here for too long. With only polite goodbyes, the crown prince strode from the jangle and jingle of the court, the list of would-be brides burning a hole through his clothes and straight into his skin. Dorian put his hands in his pockets as he strode down the halls of the castle. The kennels were empty, the dogs were at the track. He'd wished to inspect one of the pregnant hounds, though he knew it was impossible to predict the outcome of the litter until she gave birth. He hoped the pups would be pure, but their mother had a tendency to escape from her pen. She was his fastest, but he'd never been able to quell the wildness within her. He didn't really know where he was going now. He just needed to walk. Anywhere. Dorian loosened the top button on his vest. The clash of swords echoed from an open doorway, and he paused. He faced the champion's training room, and even though training was supposed to be over by now, there she was. Her golden hair shone as she wove in and out of a knot of three guards, her sword little more than a steel extension of her hand. She didn't balk at the guards as she dodged and twirled around them. Someone began clapping to the left, and the four dueling figures stopped, panting. Dorian watched a grin spread across the assassin's face as she beheld the source. The sheen of sweat illuminated her high cheekbones, and her blue eyes sparkled. Yes, she was truly lovely, but... Princess Nehemia approached, clapping. She was clad not in her usual white gown, but rather in a dark tunic and loose trousers, and she clutched an ornately carved wooden staff in one hand. The princess clasped the assassin on the shoulder and said something to the girl that made her laugh. Dorian looked around. Where was Kaol or Brullo? Why was Otterlin's assassin here with the Princess of Ilway, and with a sword? This could not go on, especially after that champion's attempted escape the other day. Dorian approached, and smiled at the princess as he bowed. Nehemia only deigned to give him a terse nod, not surprising. Dorian took Selena's hand. It smelled of metal and sweat, but he kissed it anyway, raising his eyes to her face as he did so. Lady Lillian, he muttered onto her skin. Your Highness, she said, trying to pull her hand from his, but Dorian held fast to her calloused palm. Might I have a word, he said, leading her away before she could agree. When they were out of hearing distance, he demanded, Where's Kaol? She crossed her arms. Is this any way to speak to your beloved champion? He frowned. Where is he? I don't know. If I were to bet, though, I'd wager that he's inspecting the Eye-Eater's mangled corpse or disposing of Sven's body. Besides, Brullo said I could stay here as long as I liked after we were done. I do have another test tomorrow, you know. Of course he knew. Why is Princess Nehemia here? She called on me, and when Philippa told her I was here, she insisted on joining. Apparently a woman can only go so long without a sword between her hands. She bit her lip. I don't recall you being so talkative. Well, perhaps if you'd taken the time to speak with me, you'd have found me to be so. He snorted, but took the bait, gods damn him. And when would I have spoken to you? You do recall the little fact that we traveled together from Endovir, don't you? And that I've been here for weeks now? I sent you those books, he offered. And did you ever ask me if I had read them? Had she forgotten to whom she was speaking? I've spoken to you once since we've been here. She shrugged and made to turn away. Irritated, but slightly curious, he grabbed her arm. Her turquoise eyes glittered as she stared at his hand, and his heart quickened when her gaze rose to his face. Yes, sweaty as she was beautiful.
Aren't you afraid of me?
She glanced at his sword belt. Or are you as deft at handling your sword as Captain Westfall? He stepped closer, tightening his grip. Better, he whispered in her ear. There, she was blushing and blinking.
Well,
she began, but the timing was off. He'd won. She crossed her arms.
Very amusing, Your Highness.
He bowed dramatically. I do what I can. But you can't have Princess Nehemia here with you.
And why is that?
Do you believe I'm going to kill her? Why would I kill the one person in this castle who isn't a babbling idiot? She gave him a look that suggested he was part of the majority.
Not to mention her guards would kill me before I even lifted a hand.
It simply can't happen. She's here to learn our customs, not to spar.
She's a princess. She can do what she likes.
And I suppose you're going to teach her about weaponry? She cocked her head.
Perhaps you're just a little bit afraid of me.
I'll escort her back to her chambers. She gestured widely for him to pass.
Word help you.
He ran a hand through his black hair and approached the princess, who waited for them with a hand on her hip. Your Highness, Dorian said, motioning to her personal guard to join them. I'm afraid we must return you to your chambers.
The princess looked behind his shoulder with a raised eyebrow.
To his dismay, Selena began speaking in Ilwe to the princess, who stomped her staff. She hissed something at him. Dorian's skill with the Ilwe language was spotty at best, and the princess spoke too fast for him to understand. Thankfully, the assassin translated.
She says you can return to your cushions and dancing and leave us be, Selena said.
He tried his best to look serious. Tell her it's unacceptable for her to spar. Selena said something, to which the princess only waved a hand and strode past them and onto the sparring floor.
What did you say? Dorian said.
I said you volunteered to be her first partner, she said.
Well, you don't want to upset the princess.
I will not spar with the princess.
Would you rather spar with me?
Perhaps if we had a private lesson in your chambers, he said smoothly, tonight.
I'll be waiting.
She curled her hair around a finger. The princess twirled her staff with strength and precision that made him gulp. Deciding that he didn't feel like having the daylights walloped out of him, he walked to the rack of weapons and selected two wooden swords. How about some basic swordplay instead? He asked Nehemia. To his relief, the princess nodded and handed her staff to one of her guards, then took the practice sword Dorian extended to her. Selena would not make a fool out of him.
You stand like this, he said to the princess,
taking a defensive stance.
Chapter 18.
Selena smiled as she watched the Crown Prince of Otterlin lead the Princess of Ilwe through the basic steps of fencing. He was charming, she supposed, in an arrogant sort of way. But someone with his title could have been far, far worse. It made her uneasy how he'd made her blush. In fact, he was so attractive that she had difficulty not thinking about how attractive he was, and again wondered why he wasn't married. She sort of wanted to kiss him. She swallowed. She'd been kissed before, of course. By Sam, and often enough that she was no stranger to it. But it'd been over a year since she'd lost the assassin she'd grown up with. And even though the thought of kissing anyone else had once made her sick, when she saw Dorian. Princess Nehemia lunged, slapping Dorian on the wrist with her sword. Selena bit down her laughter. He grimaced and rubbed the sore joint, but then smiled as the princess began gloating.
Damn him for being so handsome.
She leaned against the wall and would have enjoyed the lesson had someone not grabbed her arm hard enough to hurt.
What is this?
Dragged from the wall, she found herself facing Kaol.
What is what?
What is Dorian doing with her?
She shrugged. Sparring?
And why are they sparring?
Because he volunteered to teach her how to fight?
Kaol practically shoved her from him as he approached the pair. They stopped, and Dorian followed Kaol to a corner. They spoke quickly, angrily, before Kaol came back to Selena.
The guards will take you to your chambers.